Imagine waking up early before work and driving or jumping in a cab somewhere, showing up to have an incredible dance celebration with, a couple hundred to a thousand of your besties before work even begins. Well, that is exactly what my guest today, Radha Agrawal, has created. She's the co-founder, CEO, and chief community architect of Daybreaker. It's an early morning sober dance celebration. It happens in more than 25 cities and over a dozen college campuses with a global community of more than 500,000 people. She's also a social entrepreneur, actually a serial social entrepreneur. She's done it many times over. Author, DJ, inventor, investor, gifted, experienced designer, named by MTV as one of the 8 women who will change the world. But none of this would have happened had she stuck to her original plan to build a career as a New York City investment banker. In today's conversation, we dive deep into her journey and explore the critical moments of awakening and change, along with the ideas from her new book, Belong, which answers the question, how do I find my people? And how do I create large and meaningful communities in the real world? I'm Jonathan Fields, and this is Good Life Project.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Good Life Project is brought to you by Understood Explains, a podcast that's like a beacon for parents navigating the special education system. Hosted by Juliana Urtube, a special education expert, this season is all about individualized education plans, or IEPs. Juliana breaks down complex topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP in a way that's easy to grasp. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains about the difference between IEPs and 504 plans, and I was struck by the balance of empathy and practical advice. It's not just about understanding the system. It's about empowering parents and caregivers to advocate for their children, which is just so important. So I've known a number of people who've had to literally scramble to figure out how to advocate for their kids when the system seemed to just make it so hard to get the support that they need and deserve. So if you're a parent navigating this world, or even just wondering if it's right for your family, I encourage you to give Understood Explains a listen. Search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. It's like having a roadmap for a journey you didn't expect, making it a little less daunting. Good Life Project is sponsored by LinkedIn Ads. So as a business-to-business marketer, your needs are unique. B2B buying cycles are long, and your customers face incredibly complex decisions. So isn't it time you had a marketing platform built specifically for you? LinkedIn Ads empowers marketers with solutions tailored for B2B. Imagine having direct access to a billion professionals, including 180 million senior executives and 10 million C-level leaders. With LinkedIn's powerful targeting tools built for B2B, you can drive serious results. LinkedIn ads generated 2 to 5 times higher return on ad spend than other social platforms in the technology space. We've actually tapped the power of LinkedIn ads a number of times ourselves, and the campaigns have been really successful. If you're ready to revolutionize your B2B marketing, try LinkedIn ads with a $100 credit on your next campaign. Terms and conditions apply. Go to linkedin.com/goodlifeproject to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/goodlifeproject, or just click the link in the show notes. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, I'm usually just doing my Japanese calisthenics at home and a 2-song dance party in my living room.
Okay, Japanese calisthenics. You had to tell me what
that is. Oh, okay. Well, I'm half Japanese.
Right.
So, Rajo Taiso, which is like Japanese calisthenics, where in the 1920s, the entire country of Japan would do the same calisthenics every single morning together in unison as a country at specific time slots. And And so imagine how cool and connected the community felt, the country of Japan felt when everyone's moving together, right? As a community, how that connects you in flow. And then you go to work, but everyone's kind of connected energetically. No wonder Japan is like, you know, I really believe that Japan's success is attributable to Japanese calisthenics.
I mean, there's an interesting argument around that. It's funny because when I first read that and then that you shared like, okay, so now you're doing this too. I had this flashback.
I was with my team every day at 3 p.m.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. David Baker's office. Yeah.
It's like a really unifying experience.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember walking around Hong Kong, like probably close to 10 years ago now. And I'm an early riser. So just walking around was like really quiet. I was down by the water and I walked by this park and there are like hundreds of people doing Tai Chi together.
Yeah, totally.
And I was like, this is so
poetic.
Just like, yeah, I just sat there and I just kind of watched and it was like, I wasn't even moving, but I felt like in some way I was a part of it.
Right. And you can join them too. Anybody can join them. And that's what's also really cool. You know, like we do Japanese calisthenics sometimes in the park as a team. And like, we'll just invite people to come and do it with us.
That's awesome.
You know? Yeah.
Right. It's not about how well you do or perfection. It's just
honestly, it's actually meant for old ladies sitting down. And I do them every morning. I'll send you a clip of the video on YouTube that I use. But it's literally for old ladies up to little kids.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So your mom's Japanese.
Yep.
Dad's from India.
Yeah.
And you grew up in Montreal.
That's right.
So you're like this interesting blend of three cultures.
Part curry, part sushi, part Canadian bacon.
So what's it like growing up in that household?
Oh my God. It was, I mean, my dad is like, hello, how are you? You know, my mom is like, oh, you know, like they just like the thickest, beautiful kind of accent. So I have an ear for every kind of, I can tell an Asian from any part of the world, you know, but the household was just, oh my God, full of life. I have identical twin sister and another sister, Yuri, and the three of us were less than a year apart. And our home was like Grand Central Station. My parents were very much proponents of gathering. So we would have, you know, probably every week people over at our house, and we would have huge birthday parties every single year that we would invent games for as a family. And that became a tradition for all of our friends for 18 years until we all went to college. Mm-hmm. We would have these summer parties called Agrapalooza. My last name is Agarwal. So it was like Agrapalooza. My dad had the whistle and he had this whole camp that we would do every summer. And then New Year's Eve on the 30th, we'd have this like intellectual Olympics that my parents would put on in our house, where they'd have quizzes with riddles of current events from that year in every single room, where you had to decode different riddles to unscramble these letters to be the winner of that year's intellectual Olympics. It was a very entertaining household, and my parents were such creative, incredible parents, and very strict, of course, Asians.
Right, because they're first generation also,
oh yeah,
right?
Oh yeah, first generation. So very, very strict about school, about studies, about, you know, school comes first. If you don't get straight A's, you can't play sports. They pulled us out of basketball when I was in high school, and like uproar of the high school, and my, you know, and it was just like there's a whole thing. But you know, I really owe everything to them.
Yeah. What was, I mean, it sounds like it was a central gathering place, and they loved, sounds like they really instilled in you this idea of gathering and also celebration. Like, it sounds like there was no opportunity for celebration that was missed.
Oh my gosh. Celebration. I mean, Daybreaker is very much a celebration of life. And I think that is so much modeled by my parents and how I was raised. Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, again, there's two parts of it, right? So everything was celebrated, but celebrated in many ways, which is also very, again, Asian philosophy of like in winning, in victory, you know? So, you know, we definitely were pushed to succeed because, you know, if we weren't the best, you know, there was a talking to. No, but I think everything was celebrated. Birthdays, family life celebrated so much. And academics were very celebrated too.
Mm, so then what was the expectation about you and like the three sisters? Like you would go to school and then become...
Yeah, doctors. Definitely doctors. My dad, you know, until a year and a half ago would say, it's not too late to go to medical school, you know? And I was like, Dad, I've like achieved a measure of success that I hope you'd be proud of. But I know he is. I know he is. He just came to their first Daybreaker. My parents both came to their first Daybreaker 2 weeks ago.
Oh, that's amazing.
For the very first time. Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Really cool.
So you ended up going to school and then you find yourself in New York.
Yeah, well, I went to Cornell University undergraduate, played soccer there. I had learned so many lessons just being away, just from family and learning how to be independent. Just because, well, I had my twin sister with me, but she and I go hand in hand for every conversation.
Were you guys both at Cornell together?
Oh, yeah. Bunkmates and smooched many of the same guys. But we're, you know, we're best of friends. So whenever you hear like we, you know, we did this, people are always like, who's we? And I was, oh, sorry, Mickey and me, you know? So the longest we'd ever been apart until we're 21 was 8 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I was born in community, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, it's like it was, it's literally in your blood.
Yeah, truly.
So you come to New York. This is early or mid 2001.
2 months before 9/11 to the day.
Right. And what was your intention? Why were you coming here?
I moved to New York because I wanted to live in the city, and I got a job as an investment banker, actually. It was also to prove, to my parents, like, can you tell, like, a lot of my life has to do with my parents, was to prove to them that I, you know, that a communications major and a minor in film and business could get a job on Wall Street, you know? But that wasn't really why. It was just like, it was my dream to move to New York City. Yeah. And so that got us there with a really, you know, a great way in.
Right. So you're both in investment banking then?
Yeah. Mickey and I are both investment banking.
Starting in like the summer-ish of 2001.
And then
2 months later.
2 months later, 9/11 happens. And boy.
Where were you guys living at the time? What part of the city?
I was in Brooklyn. I was in Brooklyn, New York. And yeah, it comes right back, right? Like, it was a moment I'll never forget as long as I live. We had just moved our offices to Midtown. So I trained the World Trade Center, and you know, our secretary, whatever, of our group comes running in with soot in her hair, and she was just like, I just came from downtown, something's hit the World Trade Center. So you go rushing down to the fifth floor, the trading floor, and we look at all the TV screens and watch a second plane on like 50 TV screens like hit Tower 2. And it was just like, yeah, it was kind of like it hit my whole soul too, right? And like in that moment, I knew, right, the mystery of life is you never know when it's going to end. So that moment was like, it's time to pursue your passions right now. Like, what do I care about, you know?
Yeah.
So investment banking wasn't that.
I'm guessing like film background and all this other stuff, that was sort of like, okay, so I've checked that box for my parents. And
yeah, but you know, I have to say that experience of working 100-hour work weeks for a full year and a half, gave me the tools to be an entrepreneur. You know, it gave me the lack of fear of looking at spreadsheets, gave me an understanding of business. Even if at 22, I don't understand how they put analysts to work, like, you know, who don't know the first thing about business, but give us all this responsibility. But I learned a lot and I was thrown right into the fire. So I'm very, very grateful for that period of my life, even if it was suffering.
I mean, what do you think is the single biggest thing that's benefited you coming out of that window?
Work ethic, for sure. Understanding numbers, understanding my way around Excel, understanding, sort of understanding of finance in general and how business works. You know, we were in the M&A sort of department, if you will, group of CIBC. So yes, I got to really see, you know, kind of the inner workings of how shit works.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. We have, we were talking before we came on air about it, you and I had like a freakish number of similarities. So I was an M&A securities lawyer in a past life and I worked at the SEC. I worked down at the World Trade Center before 9/11 when the very first attack happened. And I was at the SEC back then and I literally went out to lunch for pizza and we came back and it's like madness was going on. And then, you know, still a like longtime New Yorker when, you know, 9/11 happened. And it's funny though, because, you know, by then I was long time out of the law. I had done a stint in a large firm before that where I was doing similarly, like I was working with investment bankers. We're all working ourselves to death, to the bone.
It was nightmarish.
And people often ask me this similar question. They're like, do you regret all of it? And I'm like, you know, the most powerful thing that came out of that window was just like you said, it was like, somebody could put something on your desk and be like, and you look at it, you're like, this is impossible to do. And then you do it.
Totally.
Like you just understand that you are capable of so much
right.
more.
Right. I think we probably both fit, you know, 2 days in one every day. Truly, you know?
Yeah.
That's so wild.
Yeah, it's kind of
crazy.
What
was your experience of 9/11?
Horrendous, just like everyone else. I was living in Hell's Kitchen at the time and married, new home, 3-month-old baby. And I had signed a 6-year lease for a floor in a building to open a yoga studio the day before.
Oh,
and I woke up that morning, I was like, wow, my world is different. And of course, like everybody here, like we were all, the first thing we're thinking about is who do we know? Because everybody knew someone.
Right.
And then I was like, okay, so where do we go from here? And I had a similar awakening to you. I had already kind of like left the path and but I was about to open a company and I was like,
so
am I actually going to do this? We opened it 2 months later and it was an amazing community for healing.
I mean, are you kidding? I mean, back then, too, yoga, I feel, was still kind of a buzzword.
It was.
You know?
It was kind of like nobody could pronounce the name of their studios. It was like...
Totally.
Yeah, people were a little freaked out by all the incense. And
how long did you have it for?
7 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was really, it was a powerful experience. But back to you.
I could interview you.
So you go from there, and this is a wake-up call for you. And you're like, okay, so... This is like, I've learned a lot from this, but yep. This is like, okay, this is not what I want to spend my days doing.
Totally.
So, back at that moment, did you have a sense for what was what you wanted to do? No,
well, yes. I was like, if I were to die tomorrow, what would I want to do? And at the time, I was obsessed with the film business. Like, that's what I thought I wanted to be in. I wanted to be a filmmaker. I wanted to be, you know, sort of, you know, telling stories. And so my entire group was laid off from CIBC because we were M&A, but from airlines, gaming and lodging.
Oh, so
it was like, it's like
gone.
Decimated. Yeah, right. Yeah. Especially casinos and that whole world, gaming, lodging. So our entire group was laid off. They put us up at this like outplacement agency where they help you like find a new job in financial services or whatever. And I go to the lady, it was like my turn, whatever, to be like, you know, interviewed by this woman. And to be like, where do you want to go next? And I said, listen, lady, like, I don't ever want to do anything. I don't ever want to be in investment banking ever again. Do you know anybody in the film business? And then she said, well, that's not what we do here, but I like you. And we had to, again, come back to community again. It's like this rapport, human connection. And we just had a wonderful connection. So she said, look, I have a childhood friend who I haven't spoken to in about 10 years, who's an agent for some of the top film and television directors in the world, like the Coen brothers and Christopher Guest and Albert Brooks and Baz Luhrmann and all these amazing, amazing filmmakers, film directors. And I was like, cool.
Like, right. As she's saying this, like, what's happening in your
I'm
heart?
Just like,
it's like your heart
whoa.
Jumping out of your chest.
Yeah,
like, wow.
I'm just like, whoa, that would be such a huge, beautiful favor that she would do for a young woman, you know? So she connected me with this guy, Carl Forsberg. What's up, Carl? And I went to meet with him, and I didn't really want to be an agent, you know, like he was an agent. But then him and his partner, Douglas, the two of them just totally just won me over with their spirit and their attitude and their kind of, hey, like you'll peel back the curtain. We'll peel back the curtain to the entire industry for you. But for TV commercials, not for film, but for TV. So then I spent 6 years learning how to tell stories in 30 seconds. So again, a beautiful sort of business school for marketing and advertising, you know, and telling stories and, you know, understanding how to make, you know, Apple computers look beautiful and how to make cans of soda look super delectable, right? Like all these aspects of the film, of the TV commercial world that you don't really think much of, the level of thought and care that is put into every detail for these larger companies was an incredible education to watch and learn from and be around all these incredible creatives who are really lending their sort of mind to making beer cans look beautiful. So I just was like in awe, honestly, of that level of creativity and thinking. And it really took me on this whole path of creative storytelling and for as it relates to products. So in the future, you know, that led to, you know, developing when I developed Daybreaker and Thinx and all these other products. I had all of this, you know, sort of 6 years of
school. Yeah, so you had to tell a story for a product or brand.
Yes. Yeah. And just like and even things like, you know, the color choices and logo style. Like there's so much around products that brand has everything to do with. And in community building is one of those things. We're talking about that today, but in community, you know, most community builders don't think about brand. You know, they don't think about logos or color palettes or font choices or how much breathing room is around a word or an image, you know, but it matters. It matters, especially today where kids are swiping and adding filters on their social media. So that education, that moment in my life really pushed me towards an understanding of sort of the creative storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, how powerful to have that experience at that moment in time.
Exactly.
So you're in
finance for, you know, to understand numbers,
right.
And then 5-6 years of marketing and storytelling.
Brand building and storytelling.
Brand building, exactly.
So after 5 or 6 years, what makes you be like, huh, like this isn't doing it for me anymore?
So in that time, about, you know, 4 years, 5 years into it, I was like 26 years old. I'd moved to Miami. I followed a guy, fell in love, you know, as you do. Met some guy, left all my friends, quit my job, the whole thing. I became an agent for another director out in Miami. And then my sister called me and she said, hey, I'm opening my first restaurant. And she said, I need help. So I went back to New York to help her open the restaurant. And, you know, left my engagement, left my house, my whole life in Miami that I had for now 2 years, and moved back to New York to help my sister open up our very first restaurant.
Okay, so we can't just jump over that.
Okay.
It's just like, because so something like, as you said, you and your sister are, you know, like tight. So you felt powerfully enough about like that you were willing to move away from New York, move into, and then something like you feel powerful enough so that you're willing to basically abandon the life that you had and the relationship that you had started building in Miami to go back to your sister.
Yeah.
What was happening?
It
like
was like
a,
divine,
a bigger picture.
It was
here.
Like divine intervention every time, you know. I really believe that. Like this, I mean, just a wild sort of quick story is that this guy who was one of my clients had hired one of my directors for one of his TV commercials. He's a cyclist. I'm a cyclist. Went for a bike ride. He crashed his bike, broke like six ribs, broke his back, broke everything. So he spent like 2 weeks in the hospital together. And we fell in love, you know? And you know, when you have the intense Florence Nightingale moment with somebody, you just deeply connect with them. And I just was so kind of in love that I said, and I needed to escape in that moment. There was just a kind of not the greatest environment at my office as an agent. I just wasn't feeling the purpose anymore in what I was doing. And I just longed to have more purpose. So I just made him my purpose, you know? So I moved to Miami sight unseen. We bought a house together, you know, got engaged in a year. Building a life in Miami, you know, riding motorcycles every weekend, you know, the whole kit and caboodle. But then in that time, I also had this deep longing and realizing that, you know, you can't give everything to just one person. You know, I had a mission and a purpose that I knew was larger than just me in this life that I was living. And so when Mickey called me, it was almost like she was like, hey, I'm plucking you out of this potential housewife situation. You know what I mean? And I am throwing you back into the so I really have.
So she kind of like, did she know before you that like this, it was time to go?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think she did it purposefully. I think she was just like, I mean, I think maybe she did, but I mean, I don't know if it was purposeful, instinctive, divine intervention that came through her that I needed the escape of coming back to New York as well. Yeah, it was a mix of things. But yeah, she's always been, you know, sort of my biggest inspiration, my closest ally. So if she needed me, I was going to be there, you know, for her.
So she's like, hey, we're opening a restaurant in New York.
Yeah, she'd raised the money already for it. The brows, you know, broke ground already. And I was just like itching to support her and help out. And so then I moved back to New York. We had these like zany, like hilarious, like marketing schemes to like get people to come into our pizza.
Like what? Tell me what. Do you
oh
remember
my God.
Any of them?
Yes, of course I do. So one of them was we auditioned for a reality TV show, the ABC like primetime reality TV show. We're like 26 years old, you know, and it was like ABC. It was like, you know, picking eight New Yorkers and giving us a mansion on Fire Island and they'll film our lives. And we were like, ooh, free marketing for the restaurant. So we auditioned and got on. And then spent the whole summer running away from the cameras because it turned out to be like a hilarious drama. But again, you know, a lot of people came to the restaurant because they saw, you know, the first three episodes before it was canceled. and then another thing we did was we went to the local gym down the street and we tried to do tastings there and they kicked us out. They were like, get out of here. We don't do tastings of pizza at our fitness. We're like, no, but it's healthy pizza. It's, you know, and it's organic. And like, what's organic? You know, like back then they didn't know what organic
was. Totally different than now.
So Mickey and I went and auditioned to become spin instructors. And then so that weekend we got a 3-day spin instructor group fitness certificate. And we went back and they didn't recognize me, I don't think, but I probably pulled my hair back or something. But I auditioned to be a spin instructor at the same fitness studio down the street. And they and they gave me the job. So once a week, I started teaching there. And after like a couple of weeks, I said, hey, I have this restaurant down the street. Can I do tasting? And by then, I ingratiated myself with all the managers and they let me do it. And we doubled our business overnight.
So you literally like became a spin instructor. So like as a marketing channel yes. for the restaurant. I still love that on so many levels.
But then I fell in love with spinning. So I taught for 8 years. And then one of my students invested $80,000 in another business that I started called Super Sprouts after I left the restaurant. Mickey and I realized that we're best at cheerleading and supporting each other. Probably not best to be two alpha females in a room together, building and growing a company together. And so we started Thinx together, but then I was like, look, Mickey, I'm too swamped on Super Sprouts, which is my kid's company that my student invested $80,000 in. Right. I ran that for 5 years and Mickey and I started Thinx together.
So what was Super Sprouts before we sort of just...
So Super Sprouts, I ran for 5 years. I raised like $5 million for it. It was like Sesame Street for nutrition education. So I got very deeply interested in childhood obesity issues. When kids would come into my restaurant, they would order just cheese pizza in the pizzeria every day after day after day. And I was like, parents would say, hey, plain cheese pizza, no green stuff on the pizzas. And I was like, what are you talking about? The green stuff is the good stuff. So then I started digging around. My investment banking analyst mind came back in and I audited the entire industry. And I'm like, wow, Sesame Street teaches about literacy. Captain Planet teaches about the environment. Dora the Explorer teaches about Spanish language learning. But who's teaching our kids about food? Nobody's teaching our kids about food in a fun and playful way that's not like eat your vegetables. So I wrote 5 children's books. I developed, 50 videos. I worked with Michelle Obama and Sam Cass. And I spent 5 years of my life building this thing. We ended up impacting like 1 million kids all around the country with curriculum. Opened the first salad bar program in Compton has ever had. So 120 schools in Compton had their first salad bar program. Opened up in Puerto Rico, like the largest obesity epidemic in the world is in Puerto Rico.
So like what's driving you through that window of time? I mean, you've got like the intersection of, yes, you're playing and co-creating with your sister. Yes, there seems like some bigger health sort of like thing that's running through everything. Yeah. And there's a process of creation.
Yeah, totally.
Was it just a blend of that? Was there something else?
I think it was also the brainwashing of, again, growing up of like, you must be a doctor, mm-hmm. right? Maybe in some ways that sort of bled into this idea that I don't want to ever be a doctor, not interested, but preventative health is actually very interesting to me. It's a different way in, a much more creative way in to not just putting a Band-Aid on a problem, but to solving the problem, yeah. right?
It's so interesting the way we hold on to that stuff from our childhood. It's like,
this is probably the first time I've put that together. But I think, I mean, also, to be honest with you, just like watching kids in New York City going from Canada, and Canada has a really healthy culture, to an American society where everywhere I turned, there was an overweight child, like I'm like really unhealthy overweight child. And it was very jarring for me. I actually cried a lot about it, And I just remember feeling just like, why? And then I would actually go and ask the mothers like, hey, just curious, like what, And I'd learn from these moms that A, they live in food deserts, B, they have no education around it, C, they have no time for it. So, so it's a mix of all those things that created these issues. And the other piece is they just didn't have a way in to talk about food to their kids. So that was what got me really interested too. But I think it's a host of reasons, right? That you do anything. But I also knew that I'd never want to bring a child into the world where they didn't have the tools. I didn't have the tools to give them sort of a very healthy upbringing too. But yeah, it was 5 years and a half. And then I was like a whole doozy of just like a hostile takeover and just like a whole thing of misaligned investors and having to sort of leave the company kind of abruptly, which was one of the most heartbreaking experiences of my entire life, like 5 years, gone in a flash. But I think, every experience that you have in life, it just makes you stronger. And I really feel like all of those tools have led me to where I am today, which is, with Daybreaker, we have no investors. It's just us. We're creating this beautiful community around the world and supported by the community for the community. So it's such a beautiful concept that's not driven by EBITDA and next quarter earnings, which sort of every single company is under the golden handcuffs of, right? Like whenever I hear my masculine friends being, I just raised $30 million. I'm like, dude, are you that? No, I'm like, but also no, it's you're now with $30 million in debt. like, it's not you raised, you're now in debt, you know? So I think we've totally screwed up the perception of what fundraising is, you know? And I'm very much a big advocate now for really, really thoughtful growth and really, really evergreen sort of year over year, yeah, sort of thoughtful profitability, you know? And I tell my team all the time, I'm like, if we have kind of an undulating wave, like kind of next 10 years where some years are less, you know, revenue generating than other years, I'm not going to freak out. You know, we're going to have a beautiful life together no matter what. And as long as it's sort of slowly going up, you know, that's way better than having hockey stick growth with a very steep and sharp kind of descend. And included in that is an anxiety attack, a nervous breakdown, and everything that I've heard from all of my friends who are Fortune 500 CEOs.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Good Life Project is sponsored by Lexus GX. So have you ever owned something that inspired you to just up your game? For me, it was this high-end mountain bike. I love the ultralight frame, the suspension, the precision gearing, and I realized it deserved to be ridden to its full potential. So I started training harder so I could experience the joy it could give back to me. And it paid off. That bike helped me discover just new levels of performance and straight up joy. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Imagine tackling rugged landscapes with the available 33-inch all-terrain tires and multi-terrain select, then unwinding with the available front row massaging seats. This is a vehicle that inspires you to go further, to live up to its full potential. So why settle? Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. Luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Good Life Project is sponsored by LinkedIn Ads. So as a business-to-business marketer, your needs are unique. B2B buying cycles are long and your customers face incredibly complex decisions. So isn't it time you had a marketing platform built specifically for you? LinkedIn Ads empowers marketers with solutions tailored for B2B. Imagine having direct access to a billion professionals, including 180 million senior executives and 10 million C-level leaders. With LinkedIn's powerful targeting tools built for B2B, you can drive serious results. LinkedIn ads generated 2 to 5 times higher return on ad spend than other social platforms in the technology space. We've actually tapped the power of LinkedIn ads a number of times ourselves, and the campaigns have been really successful. If you're ready to revolutionize your B2B marketing, try LinkedIn ads with a $100 credit on your next campaign. Terms and conditions apply. Go to linkedin.com/goodlifeproject to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/goodlifeproject, or just click the link in the show notes. Terms and conditions apply. It's so interesting that the stories we tell ourselves about what success means in the world of entrepreneurship and founders, especially because most of that is coming out of the world of tech these days. Mm-hmm. And it's like a couple of years back, somebody, you know, Amy Hoy coined this term entreporn, which I love.
It's so good. Yeah,
because it's really, it's like everyone wants to tell these crazy stories about like, yeah, the team worked like crazy, crazy, crazy. And then boom, we exploded and we're a unicorn. And then we exited at $1 gazillion. And it's like, but, you know, you're telling the story of like, you know, one tenth of the people who go into it. And also it's,
you're modeling like, the wrong reasons.
Right. Yeah. It's the wrong reasons. And most people get destroyed along the way. And is that really why you're here?
Right.
Like, even if you make it, I'm sure you've seen this too. I know so many people that have succeeded by sort of traditional metrics. Their ROI is what it needs to be. They're returning to their investors. They're setting up for exit. And they are miserable going into work at the company that they built every day.
Terrible.
I'm like, what, how is that success?
I know. No, that's it. That's exactly it. And I think I've seen that now enough times. And I've also been the victim of that myself in my previous companies to know I'm so young still to know that that's not, more than half my life and my career left, way more than half my life and career left. And it's just exciting to know that I've made so many of those mistakes early on.
Yeah, just get them out of the way.
Yeah, like misaligned investors.
We'll make plenty more.
Yeah, leading with fear, not with abundance. Like I led a lot. My one of my businesses, Super Sprouts, particularly, I was like leading with such a fear-based mindset, not an abundance-based mindset.
What was it fear of at that point?
Fear of going out of business. Fear of disappointing my investors. Fear of disappointing myself. Fear of being a failure. Fear of not achieving the goals of Super Sprouts to eradicate childhood obesity. Fear. There's just so many fears, right? And also fear of not loving exactly what I was doing every day, willing me to sort of love going into work every day, but just feeling so micromanaged by my investors and I just was so scarred by it. And then now, when I came into Daybreaker and I built the team there, it's just like such a complete 180. No investors, no stress of the quarterly or weekly or daily phone calls like I used to get. The buck stops with me, and my boss is the community, And so that's such a mindset shift. It's such a sort of a purpose shift, and it keeps me totally authentic to the mission,
So share what exactly is Daybreaker and how did that come to be? Because we kind of left the story at, okay,
yeah.
So.
Well, then things started. Yeah. Right. Well, so, okay, just a kind of quick segue. Then during Super Sprouts, we launched Thinks as a Kickstarter project. Mickey and I, we were heavy bleeders. We're Indian, Japanese and just like heavy bleeders. And we'd be in investor meetings all the time and just have these embarrassing moments, leak stains, whatever. So we sort of got our curious hats on again, like we do often together. And we started just tinkering around and calling up different manufacturers in China and sort of melding, molding fabric, getting fabrics together to invent the kind of the first ever, period underwear solution and launch on Kickstarter 2013. And
we've seen ads like all over the subway in New York at this point.
Yeah, exactly. But that's when sort of my sister took over and led the team. So she and I and our friend Antonia kicked it off, started off. And then I just was so sort of bogged down with Super Sprouts that I just didn't have time to give to Thinks. And so she and Antonia took it over. I mean, I'm still, third partner. I'm still a partner in Thinks, and founder and an inventor of the underwear. But it just, I'm so in honor and in awe of how my sister took the idea and built it to what it is,
So you go from investment banking to media, entertainment, film, TV, to restaurant industry, to media, health, nutrition, children's and education, to
underwear.
And yeah. So there's, it's kind of astonishing. It's like, do you feel risk?
Yes, that's what's interesting, right? Like I do feel risk, but I do also know one of one when I see it, right? So my sister and I always say, is this one of one? So the pizzeria, it was the only organic farm-to-table pizzeria in New York City in 2005, where we served different gluten-free crusts, different sort of dairy-free cheeses on the pizza. We eat 100 football fields of pizza every day, but yet there's not a single, but yet 1 in 4 Americans are lactose intolerant, and yet there was no lactose-free pizza in New York City. So we were like, okay, we're one of one. So no matter what, we're serving a niche client, right? Super Sprouts was one of one. There was no Sesame Street for nutrition education, right? And all of them, by the way, are social enterprises. Like that's something that's also the through line of everything that we do. The underwear, one of one. Super, yeah, so I think I said Super Sprouts, one of one. And then Daybreaker is one of one. So everything that we create isn't just another t-shirt with another logo on it, or like a new kind of sock or a new kind of shoe or whatever, you know, other than if the sock is like, you know, is like has some ballistic heel or toe or whatever, you know, kind of added to it. But yeah, I think that's really what we look at, is like, how can we continue to be the first to market with the first of its kind of product or service? Like Daybreaker. So Daybreaker is an early morning dance community. We wake up at 6 a.m. at sunrise before people go to work on a weekday morning, and people dance their butts off without substances. So no alcohol, no drugs, no, and we serve green juice, coffee, and tea. We replace the bouncers with a hugging committee. You know, we add performative elements. So imagine at 6 a.m. when you just got out of bed on a Wednesday morning before going to work, you see fire spinners and aerialists and break dancers and a horn section and dueling violinists and acro yogis, you know, kind of jumping in the air, and then 1,000 people exulting and dancing. And that's Daybreaker. And the idea was, and you know, so the first hour is yoga, the second 2 hours is a dance party. It's a 3-hour experience. And the whole idea is to just deeply transform your day and then transform your month before the next one, you know? And the whole idea is that we live life that's so routine, and our entertainment experience right now is at nighttime only, when we're tired and we don't have, we're hopping ourselves up on drugs and alcohol because we are exhausted. The energy of when you walk into an environment like a club is very different. So like I'll walk into a nightclub or whatever, and I'm, the energy levels of every person there that they're emanating is kind of all over the place, right? So it's jarring for me as an empath. And the morning when you go to Daybreaker, everyone's energy is the same. It's optimistic and bright and fresh and new, like right from their bed. So it's just like this vibration that I can't even explain unless you have to just come and be there. So we blew up. We launched in 2013 in New York City. We had our first one in New York City, and I have my community to thank for that. So like, you know, the big kind of backstory there is, you know, after the restaurant, there's so many moments where I was like, where are my people at? You know? And then 30 years old, and that's the beginning of my book, Belong. You know, I looked myself in the mirror and I realized I didn't belong, and that I spent my 20s in sports bars or hanging out with people who are inspiring, and then really, you know, taking the time to get intentional about my community, which I also read on your website is a big part of what, is what you're about, an intentional community. And I just kind of created these exercises for myself and really began this quest for where are my personal people at before I go out to build my next business or my next community or my next whatever it may be. I first have to feel fully safe and in belonging, and you know, in my own life. You know, I think so many people in community building that I've seen are looking for answers outside of themselves, whereas the answers start from within first. And so many of the communities I've been interviewed have said to me that they feel like outsiders on looking in on the communities that they've built themselves.
Yeah, totally.
You know? And so for me, you know, I learned all those lessons early on in my career and just in my 20s. So I just knew, okay, this is the time to be generous with my energy, generous people who I meet. If I love someone, instead of just hoarding them to myself, I'll introduce them to other people to make sure that ever, and then all of a sudden there's a community that will be built if like-minded people meet each other. And yes, they might hang out without me, but I'm not going to feel FOMO, you know? And so I think there's that level of trust and generosity that you have to have, and just saying, fuck it. Like, I'm going to introduce as many people as I can to each other. I'm going to just open up my Rolodex so that everyone can connect with one another. And that was the beginning of this incredible community journey for me, which then led to Daybreaker, and which then led, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because the, like your other businesses to a certain extent were, okay, I'm going to take what I see and take my skills and I'm going to scratch somebody else's itch because I can see the itch and maybe nobody else can. Whereas this was very much like you're scratching your own itch with Daybreaker. Like it grew out of that, which is like, that's a change for you.
Well, Thinks was too, actually. You know, Thinks was born out of the fact that I didn't have a solution for my own heavy bleeding. but yes, I mean, I think that all the businesses that have succeeded for me have been the ones that I've personally suffered, you know, from as well. And I think that's actually a really, an important note and distinction to share with all the listeners is just start with what sucks in your world. You know, what is it that you're struggling with? That's my sister's mantra is what sucks in your world. You know, does it suck for a lot of people? And then can you be passionate about this issue, cause, or community for a long time? So, yeah.
Which is funny, again, because when you go back to the traditional business world, It's entirely focused on what sucks, you know, but of course they use customer like or product market fit right. as like the blah, 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 boring right. version of what right. sucks in Europe.
Yeah.
But the passion side also, like what I would call product maker fit, like everyone ignores that. It's like, but nothing's going to get you through the really hard times and everything you try and build, it's going to, even if it starts easy, at some point it's going to suck for you. It's going to get brutally hard. And if you don't have that inner thing, like that deep sense of connection to it, you're going to bail.
Totally. And that's the thing. Like I looked at Daybreaker when I started that and I just was like, I literally will dance until I die. Like I will be 99, the old lady with the dentures. Hopefully by then there'll be like bionic teeth,
right?
You know, and I'll be the one dancing on the dance floor with my brand new bionic, you know, joints and stuff. But I think, yeah, I think this is something I will do Daybreaker for the rest of my life. And it's something that I feel so excited about, bringing joy and silliness and playfulness to the world. Yeah. I mean, like it's grown now. We're 25 cities around the world.
Right,
we're
it's
a community
incredible.
Of 500,000 people and we're not stopping anytime soon. Like we're now on college campuses as well. We're really focusing on the fact that college students are really dealing with an alcohol and drug abuse issue and a depression anxiety issue, largely related to the alcohol and drug abuse issue. You have a 17-year-old daughter and she's in school and I'm sure that she's probably having to shield herself from that all the time. So, you know, we've taken, you know, my fiance's younger brother, you know, had three friends commit suicide because, you know, when they were in college, turns out, you know, suicide is contagious and they're dealing with depression, anxiety as well. There's lots of stuff happening. And so for me, my dharma is truly to bring more play and kind of spaces for people to gather and connect and dance.
And do it safely. And do it in a way safely. Where it's like elevating rather than numbing.
Yes. And so much of also the conscious world can be very serious, you know? And I think that's the other piece that I've been very focused on trying to kind of not stay away from, but I think there's a lot of judgment there too. I think it's interesting, you know, you'll go to yoga class and the person next to you will be like, you're too close to my mat, you know? And I'm just like, oh, sorry.
New York is like a quarter of an inch.
I know. And so it's like, I just always ask myself, okay, well, what is conscious anyway? You know, what is a conscious community anyway? What is a conscious human anyway? Is it just going to yoga? The act of going to yoga, does that make you a conscious person? Is the act of eating from Whole Foods make you a conscious human? Or is it actually the, you know, sort of the interest in connecting with others? Is it the interest in connecting with your planet? Is it the interest in talking to someone in the street who's homeless or whatever it may be, who's experiencing homelessness? So I've learned so much from the Daybreaker community about what conscious actually means. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about, you know, talking about being conscious, but actually living in it. You know, our community members, I watch them every time at Daybreaker and I'll see, you know, someone come, you know, who could come by themselves and three community members would go and introduce themselves, you know, kind of unsolicited, not asked by any of our Daybreaker community member, Daybreaker team to go and do that. But I just watched that level of generosity of spirit happening constantly at our events. And that gives me so much hope.
Yeah. And that's amazing. And that comes, I mean, that comes from you. It comes at its source. It comes from you. It comes from the people you said, but it's also, it comes from a lot of the ideas that you share in your book, you know, because I think on occasion, you know, stuff like that just kind of randomly happens. You know, we were talking a little bit, for 5 years, we've run this summer camp for grownups and I've been to enough events, enough gatherings and stuff like that. And I've walked in and felt instantly uncomfortable.
Totally.
Where, because I'm not the type of person that walks into it and I'm like, hey, I'm here, let's party. It's not my wiring. So we become hypersensitive to like, what are the touch points that we need to create? What are the values that we need to have in place? And like, that's the work that you've done. And that's a lot of the conversation that you share and that you're sort of like going deeper into. And I want to talk about that, but there's something else that you brought up that I want to circle back to first, because fundamentally underneath all of that is self-awareness, self-knowledge.
Well, that is literally chapter one of my book is gentle self-awareness. You know, I think awareness can actually be quite harsh, right? Like, sir, are you aware of how fast you were going in the lane just now, right? Sorry, officer, right? So awareness can be really harsh when you do the work and sometimes you get trapped in your own awareness, right? So I think gentle self-awareness, being gently self-aware of how you're showing up. When you walk into a room, are you bringing the room down? Are you rolling your eyes all the time? Are you being a negative Nelly? Are you being a shoulder shrugger? Are you saying yep? Are you saying yes enthusiastically with exclamation point, right? Like, how are you showing up? And I think that self-awareness is such an, if that is the sort of the cornerstone and the first level of finding your tribe is Who are you? How are you experiencing the world? How's the world experiencing you? The first exercise I did for myself was this three-column list. Column one was all the qualities I was looking for in a friend, right? Column two was all the qualities I didn't want in a friend. It's all in my book. But column three was all the qualities I needed to embody in order to attract the friends that I wanted. So I need to be less of a workaholic. I need to be less flaky. I need to be a better listener. I need to be, you know, more just like more patient, right? And so that awareness, that self-awareness made me realize, okay, wow, well, I'm showing up in this way, which is attracting this kind of friend. So what if I actually went back to the essence of who I am, which is a kind, open, caring, you know, silly person, not putting on the air of I'm too cool for school and I'm going to wear makeup and whatever to go out on weekends because that's all everyone else is doing. I'm going to return to who I am, which is this quirky unicorn wearing whatever onesie, you know, like person. And then from that kind of space of radiating who I am from the inside out, was I able to actually find the most incredible lights who were attracted to me too, right? So it really starts from within, and that self-awareness is something I work on every day. You know, there's certainly moments every day where I can see outside of myself and I'm upset about something, or I'm hormonal from being pregnant or whatever, and I know that's happening, and I know I can be more aware of how I may be sharing my words or whatever to my assistant or whoever else it may be, my partner. But I am very, very self-aware. Yeah. And I think that's the first piece.
No, I totally agree. And I think, but it's so easy to sort of, you go to that place, you're like, yes, I'm self-aware. I'm being myself. I'm bringing like all the goofy, silly, whatever it is. And now I'm attracting all these people around me. And they're like, for the first time, they're actually my people. But then there's also, I'm curious whether you found this. Like, I think there are moments where we get a little bit spooked and we find ourselves reverting and like throwing up a bit more of a facade again. It's like we're hiding for some reason. And then stuff starts to, you're like, okay, so I'm not really loving what I'm doing or where I'm around. We don't really realize that the reason is because we just built a wall again. And then people don't want the wall. They want the real us.
Oh my God. This happens to me when I go to conferences. There's some particular conferences, but where everybody's killing it. I'm just killing it. Everyone's just killing it, you know? And of course, like, you know, I've worked so hard to shed my masculine sort of like, because I dominated me for so long trying to keep up with men in entrepreneurship. After Burning Man, actually, I realized the power in my feminine, in my divine feminine. So I really began, you know, shedding the need to show my, you know, be like beating my chest all the time. But I do find that I revert back to my masculine when I'm in those types of masculine environments where everyone's like, how much did you raise? How much did you raise? And what can you do for me? You know, right. Whatever. Like,
what am I doing?
I know. And then I find myself mirroring. I do a lot of mirroring, and then I catch myself, and my partner Eli is always like, what was that? And I'm like, and he keeps me so honest. And I'm like, babe, I don't know. Something came over me, an alien took over my body. I have no idea what just happened, but clearly I was uncomfortable and the person in front of me made me uncomfortable. And so I put on this mask, you know, and I'm working really, really hard to be fully authentic in who I am at every moment. But that's a daily practice.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
I mean, that's like a lifelong
thing. Yeah.
It's like, because at some point something else is going to trigger you. And
totally.
It's going to bring you back to that place where like,
totally. Yeah.
I just want to be accepted. Like everybody, we all go there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this, we're human beings at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Good Life Project is sponsored by Lexus GX. So have you ever owned something that inspired you to just up your game? For me, it was this high-end mountain bike. I love the ultralight frame, the suspension, the precision gearing. And I realized it deserved to be ridden to its full potential. So I started training harder so I could experience the joy it could give back to me. And it paid off. That bike helped me discover just new levels of performance and straight up joy. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Imagine tackling rugged landscapes with the available 33-inch all-terrain tires and multi-terrain select, then unwinding with the available front row massaging seats. This is a vehicle that inspires you to go further, to live up to its full potential. So why settle? Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
So once you start to sort of like build on this really deep self-knowledge, I love the three columns that you made. You also talk about like going deeper into your values and your interests and your abilities. Yes. And really identifying like that. And like then you can turn out to the world and say, okay, so I get who I am now and I get what fills me up and I get what empties me out. And now let me find people that resonate with that.
Exactly.
And so it's almost like it's a two-pronged thing, what you were talking about. Like when you can stand in that, you start to radiate differently.
That's it.
And then when you, not only that, so you start to just like, there's something about you that people want to be around.
That's it.
And at the same time, you have clarity around exactly who is it that you
want
to be
around. Right. And also you have clarity around what you're good at, right? Like I think so often we're like, I'm a meditator, but really I am ADD and I can't sit still. You know what I mean? So maybe dancing and meditation is better for you, you know, which dance is meditation, movement form. But I mean, let me just kind of touch on the values, interests, and abilities concept. Why? Because I think it's really important as part of your going in process. So my mantra for community building is you have to go in to go out. Right? You have to go inside of yourself to go outside of yourself. You know, we do this type of proctology exam for our professional lives, right? Like, and we do it for our romantic partners. Like, they have to be perfect. Whenever I ask my girlfriends, like, what they're looking for, they want to be funny, they have to be tall, they have to be handsome, they have to be this, they have to be that, you know, whatever. And I'm just like, okay, what is their energy like? Like, let's stop looking at the physical. Like, how do they make you feel? You know, what is their energy like? And then all of a sudden the conversation stops and it's like, oh, right. And it becomes like less about like the transactional thing. And it's more about the energetic thing. So the same thing with your values, your interests and your abilities, like, right. Like you sit down and you actually ask yourself, like, what do I value? And you kind of have to Google values. Like, what is a value anyway? Right. So that's it. I have you do in the book anyway. It's like Google, you know, I give you a bunch of values as well, but I'm like, look, there's hundreds of values to pick from, but take the time to write down. What are your personal values? What are you interested in, you know, exploring as a human being? Not what the press and media says, not what your mom and dad want you to do, but what you as an authentic, unique human unicorn that you are is interested in. And then what are you good at? Like, what are your abilities? Are you naturally good at taking out the trash? Because that's an ability that my fiance does not have. You know what I mean? And like, but he's incredible at cooking and he's amazing at understanding everyone's point of views. You know, he's incredibly patient. He's like so many abilities that 99% of people don't have. And I have abilities that 99% of people don't have as well. And we all have, you have abilities that you know, 99% of people don't have. And each of us have these incredible, beautiful abilities. And yet we don't sit down and ask ourselves, how can I contribute my abilities to a community? right? Like, how can I contribute my ability to be patient, my ability to cook, or my ability to take out the trash, or my ability to draw, or my ability to ask questions like you are right now in this podcast? How can I use that ability to deepen and grow my community in a more meaningful way? You use it for to build a business. You use it for so many other, again, transactional things. But if you just use your abilities to create community, then all of a sudden it becomes this like wonderful freeing experience, not a stressful, anxiety-inducing experience of where are my people at?
You know? I mean, it's so interesting too, because I think I wonder often why we don't do that, why so many of us don't do, even if we do the self-inquiry and the self-knowledge and we get it, we don't turn around and say, okay, so how do we connect with, how do we contribute to community? And I'm so curious what your thought on this is, because I think my sense has been that we don't understand how important belonging in community is until we re-experience it on a true level. And you write about this in your book, right? And this is like, belonging is a physiological and a psychological need. Like, when we don't have it, we wither on the vine and eventually die. Yet I don't think we realize that. I think we walk around in anxiety and pain because we don't understand how much this matters.
Totally.
Is that your experience too?
1,000%. That is the, honestly, the root cause of all of our suffering is our lack of belonging. And there's a few things to add there, but it's like, think about when you leave your mother's womb, you went from literally being inside of somebody else in complete belonging to a like cold, bright, like world where maybe someone took you away from your mother with forceps and now you're wrapped in some foreign blanket. So you literally went from complete 100% engulfed belonging to separation and isolation from the moment you're born, right? The moment you come to the world, you're isolated and you're separated. So you spend your entire life looking for the feeling of going back inside the womb, never to find it again, right? So it sounds morbid, right? But it's not, because that's actually the human experience of looking for the womb again. And the good news is you can find it again if, again, you understand that that's the human condition of our need to belong. We need to find the womb again. And if we can find it, if we can create an environment where we find our the womb again, then we will lead a happy and healthy life. I mean, two crazy stats for you. 1 in 4 Americans have no friends to confide in. This number has tripled in the last 30 years. And that Harvard came out with a study that shows that having poor social connections is as harmful to your physical health as being an alcoholic and twice as harmful as obesity. So, you know, there's all these studies that are coming out now that show that, you know,
it's the center of everything.
It's the center of everything.
Yeah. It's funny. In your book, you kind of reimagine Maslow's hierarchy with belonging being like at the base and then flowing through everything. It's funny because I was looking back in my notes from a couple of years ago and I drew a picture of Maslow's hierarchy as a diamond. Because when you look at it traditionally, there are like 5 levels and belonging is in the middle. I was like, no, this is actually a diamond. Like, belonging in the middle is the biggest thing. And then like it goes up and down, but everything emanates from
ladders that. From that. Yes, exactly right.
It's the same sort of like I saw your reimagining. I'm like, yep, same thing. Like,
yes.
We drew it a little bit differently.
I know.
But fundamentally, it's the same stuff. And we just don't, and simultaneously, like while we don't acknowledge it. And then at the same time, all the places where we used to find it, you used to find it in the company you worked for, not so much anymore. You used to find it in faith-based organizations, in schools. It's all going away.
Totally, like social media.
Yeah, so it's like what you're doing with Daybreaker is you're providing this like thing which is nourishing on such a deep human level.
So here's a quick definition for you that can be really helpful for you and all your listeners as well. So people use the word community today. Like, we need to find community, community. Community is all the buzzwords, all the rage. But it's being bastardized already, like the word organic, you know, like community is now another word for how many users can you get or, you know, who you can market to, right? Whereas, so I think of community actually as a container it's a space. Community is a space and a container in which you experience belonging. So belonging is the feeling that we're going after, whereas community is the container in which you experience that feeling, right? So if instead of trying to create community, we're trying to create a community where you experience belonging, that is actually the real antidote to our suffering on the planet.
Yeah, we're so focused on the mechanism rather than the experience.
The feeling. The energy.
Yeah, totally, exactly. So when you think about, and this is stuff that you write about, when you think about, okay, so what actually has to be present for you to have that feeling? Yep. What are the ingredients of that recipe?
Yep. So I don't know if you, so I coined this term, which I think is really wild that no one has ever put it together. But I was like, you know, late night, 2 a.m. And I was just like, you know, thinking about what are the ingredients that create the most wonderful, authentic community experience that inspires that sense of belonging. And I wrote down the four happy brain chemicals, you know, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. And what do they spell? Dose. Dose. Can you believe it? So that it was just like, it's like some scientist put that, but didn't even realize that the word that we use to medicate ourselves, to drug ourselves, right? Dose is actually something that we can access with our own mind if we just practice Jedi mind tricks, you know?
Why are those four things important? What does each give us?
So dopamine is the pleasure reward, right? So you feel kind of the dopamine rush when you're accomplishing a task or listening to music. So, you know, Daybreaker, you feel that dopamine rush from waking up at 6 a.m. before everyone else does. You're like, holy crap, it's dark outside. I'm waking up to butt crack of dawn. I'm going to this dance party. I'm listening to music, which is, you know, both of which give you wild and wonderful dopamine rushes. So that's the pleasure reward. So you can get that from anything that you do as it relates to going, creating an event and showing up to that. Like that's the dopamine rush of dressing up for the thing and going to the thing. Like there's a rush in that pleasure reward, right? The oxytocin you get from touch, you know, it's like, you know, humans are so starved for affection. Americans are the number one porn viewer in the world. And yet we're also the most starved. Like a study came out that on average, Puerto Ricans and Mexicans touch each other upwards of 130 times in a conversation, whereas Americans touch each other upwards of once in a conversation. Wow. And yet we are the most porn-watching country in the world. So it just says the Brits touch each other zero times in a conversation, by the way. But yeah, it is an interesting world. So oxytocin we get at Daybreaker. In any dance, any human-to-human experience, you're going to get a handshake with someone, a hug, hello. At Daybreaker, we have a hugging committee on your way in. So every single person gets a hug. And I actually am usually the hugger now at Daybreaker. So I've probably hugged tens of thousands of people in 5 years, probably hugged 400 people at an event each time before I'm, you know, relieved from my duty, 400 or 500 people. And I love it because people go from this space of like, I deeply needed that to like, thank you, to crying on my shoulder, to looks of bewilderment of like waking up early in the morning, my first time here, I came by myself, to wow, thank you for welcoming me. So it was such, like, I've seen thousands of faces go from kind of lost or sad or whatever to joyful, grateful, thankful. And it just shows how much just a simple hug can do for one another. So the oxytocin is actually what makes us human. And it is what we need to survive and thrive. And yet we don't have nearly enough of it. So that's the oxytocin release. The serotonin you get from feeling a sense of worth. You get that sort of the serotonin dump when someone's, you know, when you're on Molly, you're like, you're the best. I love you so much. La, 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 you know. But that you can get also just from having an MC at Daybreaker telling you how to stop judging yourself. This is bigger than you. Just dance and let go. We're all here together. We're on this crazy spinning planet, you know, and we have this incredible trained MCs across the world who really are kind of self-help MCs who help you get out of your shell while also motivating you to have the best time, you know, so that serotonin rush happens from those moments and from really being a one person in a bigger community and feeling like, holy crap, like this is such a wild transformative moment to be part of this community of sober humans, you know, all dancing and exalting together. And then the endorphins, of course, you get from the runner's high, from working out, from sweating, and you burn upwards of 500 to 1,000 calories, if not more, you know, at Daybreaker, twice a month. So in 23 cities all around the world.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So you've come find us, yeah.
So you've got these four things, which are all really important, and they're all part of the sort of belonging experience. They're part of the thing where you say you feel belonging.
Like totally. Well, there's another ingredient that I haven't shared, and it's a big one. This is actually the real sort of trick. It's a few things. That belonging lives at the intersection of mystery and safety. And that's a little bonus. Not in my book, actually. I forgot to put that in there, but it's kind of a big one. I was like, crap. But that belonging lives at the intersection of mystery and safety. And what that means is, Daybreaker is the reason why we've been around for 5 years already. You know, we're growing leaps and bounds, our 500,000 community members and growing thousands every day is because there's the safety in knowing that our events are going to be beautifully produced, that there's a safety in knowing that our food and beverage is going to be delicious. There's a safety in knowing that we're going to have amazing performances, an awesomely positive DJ, a great MC, really good decor. Just like the experience is going to be awesome. The people there are going to be amazing. The type of person comes to Daybreaker is an A-type personality who's going to, you know, just, it's self-selecting. It's a filtering community. It's not the negative Nancys who want to come and dance at 6 a.m. sober. You know, it's a joyful group of people who want to come and be a part of it, or at least an optimistic group of people who also want to change their own lives. Maybe they're having some struggles, but they want to come and change their own. So the safety of knowing that. And then the mystery of where's it going to be next? Who's going to be the DJ? What's the theme? Wait, who are the performers? You know, so we're always changing venues every time. We're always changing DJs every time. We're always changing the decor, the theme every single time. So we live in a time where I don't want to go back to the same place over and over and over again. You know, the attention span of an American is 8 seconds or less, millennial more likely. And so the idea is that if we can, community can sustain at the intersection of mystery and safety.
No, I love that. It makes total sense. So you're building this company, you're building this community, you're building this global uplifting experience, and you decide to write a book.
I know. I felt possessed.
Which is, you know, it's beautiful. I love this. You can see it's like sitting here in my lap and there are little things sticking out of it all over the place because there's just so much I want to revisit in it. And I do think we are in this moment where we are starved for belonging and for community, but really for belonging. And we don't know how to get it. We don't know what to look for. We don't know what to say yes or no to. And it really helps guide you and understand that. Why did you feel the need to write this now? I mean, like, you've got crazy amounts of stuff going on in your life already, and writing a book is no easy thing. So what makes you say, like, oh, now is time to actually set aside a chunk of my emotional, energetic, and personal bandwidth to do this?
Yeah, this was definitely the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life, but I really felt possessed after the elections, to be honest with you. I was just really, it felt like 9/11 had happened, you know? And I just felt like I had all this knowledge from 5 years of building these incredible, joyful communities, have inspired these spaces where people have met their best friends, their wives, their husbands, their roommates, their, you know, and here I am with all of these secrets and people emailing me once a week, twice a week, 3 times a week, asking to have coffees, which I often did. But 1 hour coffee is never enough to just share everything I know. 1 hour conversation with you, even here on this podcast, is never enough. So I want to just, you know, we can talk a lot about belonging right now, but the goal is, hey, if there's something that speaks to you, here's a book in which I have literally open source everything. Here's exactly what we did at Daybreaker. Here's the type of container, the space that we've built. Here's our tips and tricks for what we did. Here's our value system. Here's what we've, you know, here's how we've created a robust community. Here's what you can do in your personal life as well to create your dream community. And I just felt really like suicide hotlines aren't the answer. You know what I mean? Like that's what everyone's posting right now is that's the last resort, you know? Like those types of sort of places are last resort places. Like if we can actually teach each other how to belong in this world, we'll never need a suicide hotline, right? Like again, these types of things become these band-aid issues when we can be totally dealing with the root cause early on. So I just felt like, I just felt like possessed. I just felt like we need, there isn't a guidebook, a simple step-by-step guidebook that teaches you exactly how to make friends and build a community from scratch or evolve your community if you have one and want to continue scaling it. And every book I had bought was written in a way that was very academic, was written with just black and white words on a page. And I'm a very visual person. I can't read very well, to be honest with you. Like I get bored. So my book, you know, I illustrated every page as well with my friend. Yeah. And the whole idea is that the book is an experience in the same way that Daybreaker is an experience. Like you're participating in the book. There's 20 exercises in the book for you to participate in. I want you to write in the book and get dirty inside of it and rip pages out and share it with friends. And, you know, I want you to, you know, turn the page really anticipating what the next silly illustration or fun, you know, sophisticated thing I'm going to share or whatever, you know. And I also hid a secret Easter egg in the book as well. It's a key code that unlocks an experience in the real world. So for the first like 200 people who unlock the key code and enter into belongbook.com, they will have the first access to, they'll be RSVP to this wild event that I'm putting on, and I'll be hosting for 200 people here in New York City. So
very cool.
You'll have to find it. I'm not giving any hints.
Yeah, I mean, you and I could geek out on so much of this for so long. It feels like a good time for us to come full circle. So we're hanging out here in this thing called the Good Life Project. So if I offer out the phrase to live a good life, what comes out for you?
Oh my gosh, to live a good life is to be sharing it with others who fill your tank up, like with an equal energy exchange. A good life is completely shared, you know, truly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and thanks also to our fantastic sponsors who help make the show possible. You can check them out in the links that we have included in today's show notes, and while you're at it, be sure to click on the subscribe button in your listening app so you never miss an episode, and then share the Good Life Project love with friends. When ideas become conversations that lead to action, that is when real change takes hold. See you next time.